Have any of you ever been to Venice? Beautiful place. Beautiful place. And the combination of heavy old buildings and rising sea levels mean that this beautiful city, filled with art, is regularly inundated by the Acqua Alta. And the waters rise and the sirens sound, and out come all the duckboards so the people of the city can walk around above the rising waters. And if you look at a map of the projected effects of rising sea levels on this city, their future looks very, very bleak indeed. Let's just say non-existent. And what about Tuvalu? The local population growth and the warming of the ocean surface are already placing enormous pressure on the islands. In March of this year, storm surges destroyed or contaminated every freshwater source on the island of Nui. Warmer oceans have already triggered the bleaching of 4/5 of their coral reefs, which has meant much less reef protection and lower resilience for the islands during the increasing numbers of severe storms. The Prime Minister, Anele Sapoaga, is urging other nations to tackle climate change, since the changes which have already taken place are having such a dramatic and destructive effect on his country. Like Venice, and like its neighbour Kiribati, the long-term future for Tuvalu looks pretty grim. Meanwhile, increasingly intense cycles of El Nino and El Niña are leading to bigger storms and greater storm surges around the Pacific, causing massive coastal erosion and flooding from Sydney to California. And in the Atlantic, a rise in ocean surface temperatures are triggering much higher hurricane wind speeds and more damaging storms, such as we saw in Hurricane Katrina and more recently in Hurricane Sandy. Now, this Friday saw the largest climate rally in Australia's history. An estimated 60,000 people marched through Melbourne calling for climate justice. And all over the world, people are demanding that governments commit to reduced emissions targets and limit the rise in global temperatures. But what on earth do these situations have to do with our faith and with Advent? The transliteration we used is not quite the NRSV. I'm preaching from the NRSV and I'll quote it throughout, because there are meaning differences. I was just acutely aware of the differences this time. Anyway, we just heard Jesus say, "There'll be signs in the sun, the moon and the stars, and on the earth distress among the nations, confused by the roaring of the sea and the waves." Now, these signs and portents form part of a much longer sermon in which Jesus says, "When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then you know that its desolation has come near. Those in Judea must flee to the mountains, and those inside the city must leave it, and those in the country must not enter it, for these are days of vengeance." And it's in this context that he goes on to talk about the sun, the moon, the stars, the waves, and the seas. So one way of hearing these words is to place them into that historical context. We know that Jesus was speaking to a people whose city was dominated by Rome. And he was describing in very practical and poetic ways the catastrophic upheaval that was to come. And his advice was sound. "Your rabble-rousing against Rome can only lead to destruction, for the wrath of Rome is great. And when this wrath is visited upon Jerusalem, it will be like the sun exploding. Get the hell out of there and run for the hills." And we know that 60 years later, this is exactly what happened. Rome became fed up with the constant agitation and revolts and came down on Jerusalem with an iron fist. And the temple was destroyed and the people were killed or scattered. And the upheaval was as violent and decisive as Jesus had predicted. Now, if that's all that these words have to offer, a description of a far-off historical event and proof of Jesus' skills as a soothsayer and a poet, then I reckon we can all close our Bibles and go home now. But we've been given a living word, a word which continues to speak into our lives and our contexts, and it has plenty to say to us now. For we are a people facing catastrophic climate change, and we hear the words of Jesus on the eve of the UN conference on climate change, which will be held in Paris this week. Jesus says there will be signs in the sun, the moon and the stars, and on the earth distress among the nations, confused by the roaring of the sea and the waves. People will faint from fear and foreboding of what is coming upon the world. I don't know about all of you, but when I read about climate change, I feel faint. The destruction of Venice or Tuvalu or Kiribati or coastlines all over the world. Out of control wildfires in California and Indonesia. The devastating droughts. The desertification of formerly arable land. The melting of the polar ice caps. The sixth great extinction of species on this earth. I can't read about these things and not feel faint. Because I'm such a little person and the powers are so big. The governments and the disaster capitalists and the environmental hoodlums keep chopping down the trees and pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. They will not change, and there seems to be nothing that I can do about it. Many people believe we've passed a global tipping point for a temperature rise of over 2 degrees, and that this catastrophic change is inevitable. In despair, I keep living as I always have done, with my eyes closed tight against the impending doom. I drive when I could catch a train or walk, I buy food from far away, and I bring home mountains of plastic packaging. Like all of us, I live in a city of sprawling suburbs and choked roads, dotted with McMansions which are cooled by electricity generated by burning brown coal. And I close my eyes. And in the evenings, I pour myself another glass of wine and try not to think about the future. But every now and then, I wake in the middle of the night, frozen with fear for my children and my children's children and the world that they will inherit. And I'm doing exactly what Jesus said people would do. He said, when people see these signs, the rising floodwaters, the raging storms, the warming oceans, the plastic seas and the sixth great extinction, then people will faint from fear and foreboding of what is coming. People will be frozen with fear. They will feel paralysed and helpless. They will wake in the night and feel sick. And in their despair, they'll do nothing. But from Jesus, I also hear a rebuke. Because despair is not what Jesus demands of his people. People will faint from fear, but when these things begin to take place, stand up. Stand up and raise your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. Melting polar ice caps, rising oceans, out-of-control wildfires and extreme weather, well, they're hardly something to celebrate, but they are signs. They should make us afraid. They should make us very afraid. But as followers of Jesus, we should let them galvanise us into action. Be on guard, he says, so your hearts are not weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and the worries of this life. Don't pour another glass of wine. Don't stop yourself from thinking about these things. Don't allow yourself to be crippled by fear or anxiety. Don't submit to the powers which see the world only in terms of money and tell you that everything's hopeless and demand that you ignore what's happening. And don't be lulled by a false sense of security and by the lures of this age. Instead, stand up. Stay awake, be alert, and seek the reign of God which is at hand. For we are a people not of despair, but of hope. We know that reversing climate change is impossible. But in the face of the impossible, we've got the right to demand a miracle. We can't heal the earth alone, but with God's help, a million small changes may lead to great and radical change. With God's help, a million small dreams may lead to the healing of the earth and of ourselves. Do you remember the hole in the ozone layer? When I was in primary school, it was terrifying. We were all going to be burned up, and my children would never be allowed to play outside. Healing that hole seemed impossible, insoluble, and a sign of the end times. But people all over the world campaigned, and scientists worked, and nations were lobbied. In 1996, developed countries stopped using non-essential ozone-depleting substances. In 2010, developing countries made the same commitment, and the hole is now shrinking. By the middle of this century, it's predicted to return to pre-1980 levels. Miracles happen, and the apocalypse can be reversed. With climate change, another apocalypse is at hand, and it will come upon all those who live on the face of the earth. The waves are rising, the oceans are surging, and the temperature is going up. It's the hottest October on record. We're witnesses to the first signs of the apocalypse. We feel the fear, but as followers of Jesus, we do not live by this fear. We live by love. We love God's good earth, and so we care for it. We love our children, and so we work for their future. We love all God's children, especially those in the developing world whose lives will be most profoundly affected by climate change. And so we work for their future too. Climate change is much bigger and more complicated than a hole in the ozone layer. There are many more factors, but it means that there are many more things we can do. And as people of love and hope, we can all do small things. Very practically, we can write to politicians regarding Australia's emissions, which are currently set to increase by 6% by 2020. We can all eat less meat and bring home less plastic and drive fewer miles than we did last month. We can switch to green energy, use things until they wear out. We can lobby banks and superannuation funds, ask them to divest their carbon-heavy portfolios. We can host climate conversations at our kitchen tables. We can plant local indigenous plants in our gardens, just as we're about to do at church. And on, you guys know the drill. But by themselves, none of our small actions will fix the global problem. And none of these ideas are particularly radical or exciting, but we're not called to do everything. Like the first Christians, we're called to be steadfast. We're called not to give up. We're called to engage in the practices of faith, in praying and hoping, reading the scriptures, sharing the sacraments, seeking justice, including climate justice, loving kindness, and letting all these things shape us as we seek to live in right relationship with each other and with God's good earth. And we keep seeking the reign of God, the shalom which never fully arrives, but which we glimpse again and again, here and now, in small ways and in small things. And we hold on to our hope, hope for the radical and impossible change that is necessary, hope for miracle upon miracle, and hope that when the time comes, we'll be found to have been good and faithful stewards of the earth and can stand with our heads held high. And we hope for the coming of the one who is at the root of all our hope, the one who seeks willing workers in the field, the one whose coming promises healing of the earth, and with it, our redemption.